Sound advice to keep your body and mind in perfect harmony. You're tuned in to the Dr. Steven Show. Now, here is Dr. Steven Eisenberg.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Steven Show. I'm so happy to have you with us today, and I'd like you to welcome our fabulous guest, Dr. Amy Coleman. She founded WellSmart. It's from WellSmartServices.com. Now, what is WellSmart? It's, other than a great name, well, it's a community that fosters an environment of healing, offering a refuge and a source of knowledge for patients to take a more informed role in their own well-being. And for providers like me to have a science-based, technology-supported approach to increasing empathy in their work. Now, as you know, I'm like, empathy is everything to me. And that's why I am so glad to have Dr. Coleman with us. She started out as a flight surgeon in the U.S. Air Force. And through wartime medicine, she learned what it meant to be a fully integrated unit and a team with her patients. So, talk about integrative health. Talk about empathy. We've got the queen of empathy in medicine with us today. And wait until you guys see what she has created with WellSmart Services. We'll be right back with Dr. Amy Coleman. This is The Dr. Steven Show. And we are back. Thanks for coming back to The Dr. Steven Show. And I am thrilled to introduce the one, the only Dr. Amy Coleman. Thanks for being here today, my dear. Thank you for making the effort and the trip. I know it was hard, but I'm so happy that you're here. Now, I want to start off by showing you all this amazing book that Dr. Amy wrote, Discovering Your Own Doctor Within. And it really talks about becoming your own powerful healer. We all have a healer inside of us, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Tell me about it.
We really do, and that's why we usually go into medical school. We have this essence about us which really wants to help and do our best work. And unfortunately, a lot of times in medical school, it seems like we're more of a hard drive, an external hard drive that just has to absorb and regurgitate information. And sometimes we lose the humanity of that. And I know you probably know that because you've been through the rigmarole yourself. Well, for me, I was partially spared because I got a scholarship to medical school by the United States Air Force.
Cool.
Yeah, which allowed me to have a long break between my medical school and my residency. It allowed me to do a lot of medicine within a larger group service atmosphere. And
so you're all over the, you're in the U.S. Air Force,
mm-hmm.
and you're a doctor in the Air Force.
That's right.
And you're, where are you in the world now?
So now I've gotten out of the Air Force after 8 years.
No, but when you're in the Air Force, mm-hmm. like you're all over the world, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Where were you? Like where did you go?
Oh, where was I stationed?
Yeah.
So I originally, after my internship year, it was when 9/11 happened.
Oh my God.
And I had the choice to join a prestigious residency or go directly into the Air Force and serve as what they call a flight surgeon.
Flight surgeon,
right.
Okay.
And it was all I could do to not get on that plane and go to New York City and try to help out. The next best thing I could do uh-huh. was actually join as a flight surgeon. And it's not operating at high altitude with very steady hands, like some people would think with the name.
Right, flight surgeon.
No, what it actually is you're the pro-team physician for a group of specialized airmen or Air Force personnel. My specialty group was the special ops, special operation tactical teams.
Wow.
Or the F-16 pilots. And wow. then I graduated from that into the flag officers, which were colonels and above up to four-star generals, which included the U.S. Air Embassy members of all the European countries.
So you're the doctor for all of these big wigs within the military.
Right.
Colonels, generals. What, like the elite Green Beret, the SEALs, you're taking care of them?
Right. And I only had 1 year out of internship training. So I did a lot of work on consulting my consultants and reaffirming and researching what the answers were. But I also was very close to my military members and my teams. Mm-hmm. And I was so close in knowing when they were just the least bit off. So they're in preventative medicine lines because you can catch what happens before it becomes a disaster.
So you could sort of tell when one of these highly trained military operatives was starting to sort of go down the slippery slope of bad health or mental issues, you know, stress, anxiety. You could pick it up.
Yeah, and that saves a lot of money when it comes to healthcare dollars, which is where we're trying to go now in the civilian sector. Unfortunately, we're very reactive in the current medical system. If we practice just a little bit of preventative medicine and know our patients and actually form a team with them and see them eye to eye as a partnership and a friend, that's what I learned in the military was there was no separation.
I like this.
Yeah.
I like this. I call it a powerful partnership.
Exactly.
Sort of like this.
Yes.
Two doctors on the air talking about humanity.
That's right.
That's what we need in medicine. We just, you know, in our training, you know, we hardly sleep.
Exactly.
We're sleep deprived. We're going around making these life and death decisions. We have to get back to our human essence. And you know, how can we take care of others if we can't take care of ourselves?
That's very right.
And so even, you know, they say doctors are the worst patients, correct?
I am.
I have to tell you, I have like sleep apnea going on right now. My wife won't even sleep in the same bed with me because I keep her up all night. I don't blame her. But I mean, she's a pioneer because we worked it out. But I need to get help. And I'm like putting it off. So I have to be my own doctor. Like, no, I shouldn't be my own doctor, but I have to give myself time to heal, right?
That's exactly right. I think sometimes we're in this modality in the civilian world that, you know, it's a flag of honor if you're overexerted or if you're underslept or if you're overly fatigued, that somehow that you're doing a better job because you're pushing yourself to that limit.
Yeah.
And I say the opposite. As a matter of fact, in the Air Force, we learned that those cause mishap investigations and problems in the military and things breaking down, and those include people.
Yeah. Well, you know, Arianna Huffington just wrote a book called The Sleep Revolution, and she does talk about doctors and pilots and also drowsy driving in truckers, and that we can't do this anymore. We have to really get the rest that we need to regenerate.
That's it. And as a flight surgeon, that's what I would see in people is that if they weren't taking care of themselves, or even if they had a problem where certain medications weren't working and causing side effects, just being perceptive enough to pick on the subtle clues. Because very often, I would call it veterinary medicine rather than flight surgery, because they don't talk to you about what's wrong. They never give you the hints and clues. It's very intuitive medicine.
Is that a macho thing?
It is. Okay. And every time they see the doctor, there's a risk that they're taken off of flying status or working status, and they don't want that. So you learn to be an investigator of the intuitive clues that your patients are giving you.
So you must be very sensitive and intuitive and you're sort of looking at the whole person, not just the illness. Sort of you're taking in the whole psychosocial essence of that elite, trained military type, right? I mean,
I get
that.
But you do it in a very subtle way. If you went in there sprinkling incense and having daisies around your forehead, like a, you know, like most times those type of ideas are associated with, you know, the receptivity of that would be very low.
So these are like really tough individuals.
Right. But I would tell you that there's a very intuitive side to all of them. To be honest, the most intuitive were the generals. And they were oftentimes the most sensitive. So, of course, none of us go without these ideas of being a full human, even though a lot of times we suppress and feel like we could be superhuman and ignore those fundamental values that keep us going on all eight cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to address every single one of them to stay human.
Well, let's talk about some of those. And you go into those in the book, Discovering Your Own Doctor Within. What are a few steps that everyone can do to get back to their fundamental highest self and discover this doctor within themselves. What's a few actions people can take in the next week?
I think a really great question, Stephen. I actually think I'm going to back up a little bit now. I'll rephrase part of the question as to maybe not how to act or what to do, but just how to be. Oftentimes,
yes.
we have too much action in our life.
We're human beings, not human doings.
High five on that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly.
How can we be as human beings that will foster, cultivate our own doctor within? Okay, I'll reframe
exactly
the question that way. How can we be?
So, creating some atmosphere of silence and of deep listening to yourself. If you don't employ it to yourself, you can't employ it to your patients. So deep listening for people can look different. For some people, it may be they go to a park and they just let nature invest their whole self and they let the world slip away. For other people, it may be meditation. For other people, it may be deep prayer.
Yeah.
For other people, it may be sitting on the front porch with their 90-year-old grandmother who just seems to put everything in perspective.
Wow.
So creating that pocket of that deep listening to yourself first is where you truly get in touch with that creator of your healer within.
I love it. So pressing the pause button and listening to yourself is huge. And I do TM. I do transcendental meditation. So I try and do I always get my 20 minutes twice a day? No. But I try to do some each day, and I found it's really been a godsend for me to center myself and to sort of come back to be able to be with the patients, to be able to listen.
Right. I have another philosophy about that that I've mentioned in the book as well, and that is that oftentimes people think that there needs to be a closet space or a place of intimate reflection or a somewhere they have to go. Again, we're always considered with doing and going. But the meditation or those places where you practice actually need to happen in these little micro units. As you're walking and talking, being in your clinic, in traffic, those meditation places need to come out of those dark spaces. And they need to actually be in our day, in front of our eyes, with whatever we're present with. So often, to remain in this place where the art of deep listening that I provide my patients in discovering your own doctor within stories, it is that. It is that constant reflection so that I can stay in that open space and be able to listen with more than just my ears.
I love that. It's meditation in motion.
It is.
It's bringing it wherever you are.
It is.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I really like that a lot.
The people he sees are sick, but he sees the humanity.
I am just so impressed with your meditation in motion concept, that it's not just for those 20 minutes in a dark room. It's to bring it out into wherever we are to enhance that meditation in motion. Now, how do you do that? How do you go from, okay, I'm in a room, do not disturb me, to, okay, I'm with someone, I'm giving them, news about cancer.
Oh, that's a good point.
Or whatever.
That's such a good question, Stephen. Well, there was this ancient poet, and his name was Rumi. Islamic mystic poet, Sufi master. And he would often say that there was a great benefit to meditation because it connects you with what basically is your higher self, conscious awareness, or whatever you want to call that. But he also said one step above that, he found, was conversation. And he said conversation to him often meant that it was a connection to something that was bigger than their self, bigger than his self. It was more part of a whole or a loving being or a loving entity. And he actually would say that you could see the person in front of you as that. And that when you do that, the conversation you have with someone becomes a meditation. So your meditation can actually be the people that you are in front of you each day. And that means it really is remarkable, because to do that you have to drop off so much baggage.
Yeah.
You have to leave behind judgment, you have to, of yourself and others,
uh-huh.
And you have to be in a space of just where your mind is still. And that's where Einstein actually got his highest thoughts, his greatest theorems, was when he said he had no thought in his mind. And it was actually clear when the idea just dropped in of these relativity theories. And Newton, the same way, sat underneath an apple tree. Not mind was clear.
Yeah.
And what did he discover? Gravity. So what could you find? What could you think if you were outside of your own way?
Hmm. I think that's beautiful. The first thing that came to my mind was, what about those challenging conversations or those individuals you have an already always opinion of? Like, here we go, it's Mrs. Jones. But I like what you said, you have to let, you're constantly letting go.
Absolutely.
You're constantly letting go, recreating, letting go, listening, being in the other's shoes, getting in their world. What's it really like for Mrs. Jones?
That's right. Absolutely. And Mrs. Jones can be different on a different particular day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you channel her into the space that she was in the last visit, she'll most likely fulfill those expectations and play that role.
Yeah, it's like we're seeing everyone through our own filters.
Exactly.
Yeah, and maybe it's time to take off those filters and just be with the other in human being.
Absolutely. Maybe pretend for a moment that we don't have any answers and let them give us the answers to how they see things.
I love it. Yeah, because doctors don't have all the answers.
No, we don't. We don't know what we don't know half the time.
Yeah, it's cool. There's what you know. There's what you know that you don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to do brain surgery. I'm not a neurosurgeon. I'm an oncologist. And then there's what we don't know that we don't know.
And there's the wisdom, because that's how Einstein got his best theories and algorithms. And that's how some of the best scientists were. They were always curious, but anything could be a wave or a particle, so they wanted to keep it in that space.
So you must have been in a very clear, beautiful, awesome space when you came up with the whole concept for EPC. Tell me about EPC.
Sure.
How did you come up with this concept that we're going to drop these clinics in a war zone? Or that's maybe a bad example, but... Where are we putting these clinics, and what are these EPCs?
Oh, absolutely. So, when I was a flight surgeon, often was called to do medicine in many remote parts of the world. For the NATO Peace Summit, I was in Latvia, had nowhere to practice, so was trying to bring together from here and there supplies and a room I could use and making it clean enough. And so I was always just putting together what I needed. That existed in Iraq as well and in rural Germany and other places.
Mm.
So when I got out into the civilian world, I was so excited when I ran into an architect who had come up with this design of this very conscious, intention-minded, green, sustainable clinic space that literally was the size of like a cube, like a 10x10 cube, but wherever you go to take it, you can take it by the back of a truck or in many different modalities. You can carry it by a helicopter or off the back of a cargo plane. Anywhere you want to drop it, you can do that. Or you can just pull it. I mean, it's simple to place anywhere in a rural setting, third world country, first world country.
And when are these going to be?
Well,
are they there already? Are they almost ready to be launched?
We have the plans for them now, and we've had to secure 3 patents on it because of the interior designs that make them so sustainable. They're solar powered.
Cool.
The water is completely recyclable, reusable, and so this is a clinic off of the grid system. For 2.5 months, it needs no replenishment.
Nothing.
It brings a lot of natural light in. It's a beautifully architected space. And what I love about it, Stephen, is that, you see, right now what I noticed when I exited the military and went back into the civilian sector was that we don't have a lot of choices as young doctors. we may have to sign contracts with large medical groups or hospitals that already have a plan on how they're going to run the system. Mm-hmm. So you can think
of
these...
You've got to fit into their mold.
Exactly. And that can be so frustrating, because one of the best parts of being in the military was that I got to home grow my own type of gourmet clinic.
Cool.
The way I wanted to do it. And so these epic centers create almost like a food truck, gourmet cuisine kind of kitchen, but the clinic version of that, so that we can embed the technology that's not quite accepted from the hospital systems yet, that we can...
Some of the exponential medicine thinking. Shout out to Daniel.
Yeah, some of the exponential medicine thinking can actually thrive in these smaller environments where... The community gets behind them and sees how important they
are.
Sustainable.
Mm-hmm. How long again? 2.5 months?
2.5 months sustainable.
With
exactly.
Nothing needed.
No electricity needed. Absolutely not. So
where's the ideal place that you would envision the first all finished, beautiful, well smart services EPC? Expeditionary preventative clinic.
Good job.
Boom. All right. Where would we want the first one to go if you could have it anyway?
You know, that's a great question. I would like it to go to a new doctor, brave, courageous in the field that would want their own practice.
In like an underserved area?
In either an underserved area or in a disaster relief situation,
because you could take Haiti or something,
or anywhere in the nation of the United States. Currently,
you're saying even U.S.
You could use it for any disaster relief in the United States.
Flooding.
Exactly. We've also been contacted by Nepal, where they've had a lot of landslides. A lot of infrastructure has been taken out. And so
it's like, beep, boop, hi, this is Nepal. Can we have Amy on the phone? We need some WellSmart clinic. Like, but that's real.
My architect won a national award for the innovation, and it was sponsored by a Nepalese engineering firm. So they had great evidence of this. He would not sell his idea of the structure, so
someone wanted to buy it.
They did. So instead, we're keeping the patents and making it a company. Exactly. So this is how a doctor can actually practice medicine where they want to get the community. They get the community where they want to get to know, and it makes it so homegrown and fabulous because we can integrate so many technologies.
So when do you envision, or do we have a date that the first one will be completed, or is that still a little ways off?
Right now the prototype is being planned, and we're gaining the expertise of a lot of different engineers, because this is the first time something like this has been truly built out. So now that we've got the patents approved and we can move forward to the build out, that's going to be the exciting part, and I see that over this next year. Now, we had the 3D model at Exponential Medicine this last November in Innovation Lab.
Yes.
So we're building, starting small and getting bigger and bigger until we've got all that we need.
I love your vision.
Yeah. Well, thank
you. It's making a difference for the entire world.
Thank you.
Because there's so many areas in the world where there's no access.
And you know what, Stephen? We actually have a pilot program for a better access to care as well, utilizing paramedics. We're working with the paramedic board in Kentucky so that we might be able to utilize that very important medical assistant team to go into homes and use the Wi-Fi capable technology that we know and trust.
Yeah.
Like Eric Topol has, Dr.
Yes.
Eric Topol, and all these great innovators.
Yes.
So if we can upload all this data in a physical exam way through paramedics in the home visits, then we can have our video consulting, our Skype to Skype, and our video visit with our patient with the information, and the patient has been touched. So it's no longer just a screen to screen interview.
There's still a human there
to collect the data. So we've got WellSmart's got a lot in the pipeline as to how we might rebuild an infrastructure that works for us and the patient.
Wow.
Location independent.
Yeah, so WellSmart goes beyond the EPC.
It does.
And it's looking at all of different ways to increase access, to increase empathy, That's my favorite E word in the world, empathy.
And you and I came from the hard school of Knox when it comes to medical school. But medical schools are interested in reintroducing empathy, and WellSmart is actually working with Humans of Health, which is an organization that teach healthcare leadership schools all over Europe.
And you're leading one of the courses.
It's coming to New York City this July.
And what's it called?
It's called Healthcare Leadership School, and it's put on by Humans of Health, and I'm one of the trainers and instructors this year in New York City. We'll also be having a healthcare leadership school in Kentucky, in the Louisville, Kentucky area.
I like Humans of Health. Mm-hmm. Is that like Humans of New York? You know, that book,
you know,
that came out?
That may be their inspiration for that title.
That's really cool. Humans of Health.
Yes.
I love it.
They've taught 3 to 4 other health leadership schools. One in
Portugal.
You're
one of my favorite humans in health.
You're one of mine.
Okay, sorry. You were just telling me something
They've
else.
Already taught these schools in Portugal, South Africa, and the Netherlands, and they are greatly received by medical students who want the information on how to be empowered healers in their field.
Empowered and empathetic. Empowered, empathetic.
That's right.
And Amy.
Steven.
EEA. Now, where can med students or anyone else who's interested find out about you teaching this course?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is wellsmartservice.com. There's a link there. They can also go to humansofhealth.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a Facebook page for that as well. And they're taking applications now for the New York City version of the Humans in Health Healthcare Leadership School.
Can you get me into that? I might want to have you as my teacher.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I love your teaching style. Oh, you taught me a lot today.
I'm so glad.
And I want everybody to run out and get the book, Discovering Your Own Doctor Within. It's about mind, body, and spirit, and we're all capable of increasing our own healing power. You just have to listen. You got to be open and be willing to listen for that healer inside of your own self.
That's right.
Yeah, right. All right. Wow. Thank you again for being here today.
My pleasure, Stephen.
We're all thrilled to find out when the first expeditionary preventative clinic
epic.
Is. Epic. Right, epic. EPC,
it's gonna
epic.
It's going to be epic.
It's going to be epic. It really
it is.
And we can't wait to hear about it. We can't wait to see the first one making a world of difference.
I think I'll park it right outside your studio.
Yeah. Wait, maybe you should come back on another episode and we should show the 3D model.
Oh, that sounds great.
I would love that. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here today. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Amy E. Coleman from WellSmart Services, WellSmartService.com. And we will be back next week. And this is the Dr. Stephen Show. Bye, everybody.
There's a doctor named Stephen Eisenberg down San Diego way. He's got a didgeridoo, and man, you gotta hear him play. When his patients come in for chemo, he knows they'll be upset. He picks up that didgeridoo and plays music they can't forget. Dr. Stephen. Stephen Eisenberg, Dr. Stephen, Dr. Stephen Eisenberg. Doctor knows that music can soothe the soul. Let me tell you, Dr. Stephen's got it all under control. The people he sees are sick, but he sees their humanity. Let me tell you, Dr. Stephen has earned his medical degree. Dr. Stephen, Dr. Stephen Eisenberg.